This is Audible.
You're listening to the audio production of Where Shadows Meet by Colleen Coble, published by Thomas Nelson and read by Devin O'Day.
Part 1. 1. Hannah, why do you fight back? Always you kick against the goad. We're told to turn the other cheek. Patricia Schwartz. Hannah Schwartz quickened her pace along the path from the farmhouse until she stood on the hillside, peering down at the covered bridge. The Indiana winter wind pierced through the black wool cape she wore. She played nervously with the strings on her bonnet. Had he come already? Oh, she shouldn't be here. Mam would be so unhappy with her. But Hannah had made this choice for a good reason. Though only 7 o'clock, the darkness deepened with the storm clouds building in the southwest. Thunder rumbled, and she heard the strains of her cousin Mose yodeling as he went to the barn. She couldn't let him see her. Slipping past the bare branches of an arching goldenrod barring her path to the road, she hurried the last few feet. Flanked by bare maple trees, the opening yawned ahead. She stepped onto the planks of the bridge. A lingering odor of gasoline exhaust made her sneeze 3 times. Pausing, she waited until her eyes adjusted to the deeper gloom. She didn't need light. The interior of the covered bridge was as familiar to her as her own bedroom. Reese would be along in a few minutes. She shivered, but not from the February chill that swept down off the hills of Park County, Indiana. It was wrong to be here, if her parents knew. And Noah. She paced the wide wooden boards of the covered bridge, pausing occasionally to listen for the sound of Reese's truck. She'd expected him to be here waiting for her like usual. Perhaps he'd had to attend a convenience store break-in or some minor law violation. She leaned against one of the massive crossbeams supporting the bridge and looked through a cutout in the siding that formed a window overlooking the water. Still, there was no sign of Reese. If he didn't come soon, she would have to go back. She heard an engine and turned with an eager smile, only to face 2 men she'd never seen approaching in a small 4-door car. She stepped up onto the footpath of the bridge and waited for them to pass, but the car slowed. The window ran down, and a man who looked to be in his 30s leaned out as the car stopped. He hung his arm, covered with a red and black plaid jacket, out the window. His blonde hair was thinning on top, and his pale blue eyes gleamed in the light from the car's dash. "Hey, pretty lady, need a ride?"
"No, I'm waiting for a friend," she said.
"Well, your friend's not here, but we are."
The door opened and he got out. The other man hopped out as well. He was about the same age and wore an orange hat. They approached where she stood. Hannah shrank back. "My friend will be here any minute." The man's smile turned predatory. He grabbed her arm and pulled her toward him.
"We can have some fun."
"No!" She struggled to pull her arm from his grasp, but his other hand snaked around her waist. To her horror, she felt him grappling with the snaps on the back of her dress. "Let go of me!" Panicked now, she began to kick and strike at him.
"Whoa, we've caught ourselves a little wildcat!"
He pinned her hands down and began to drag her to the car. The other man held open the back door. "Where was Reese?" She opened her mouth to scream, but the man clapped his hands over it. She smelled tobacco on his fingers and beer on his breath. He tossed her like a rag doll into the car and began to crawl inside with her. She kicked him in the face and scrabbled for the other door, only to find the other man there. A shriek tore from her throat. Hannah's limbs froze. This couldn't be happening. The first man's face twisted into a snarl, and he grabbed her ankle when she tried to kick him again. He managed to climb in next to her.
"Get us out of here," he told the other guy.
The man in the orange cap ran around to the driver's seat and jumped in. He accelerated toward the end of the bridge. Hannah shrank against the door and fumbled with the lock. The blonde man grabbed her arm.
"No, you don't."
He tried to kiss her on the neck, but she bit him on the ear. Bile rose in her throat at the taste of his blood. He swore and pulled away, holding his ear. His face darkened.
and he raised his hand. His arm and hand cast a shadow in the light of the overhead dome. She cringed just before his slap landed on her cheek. Her vision darkened, and she saw stars. The car was nearly to the end of the covered bridge. The man in the front seat swore, and the brakes began to squeal. The car fishtailed as he tried to stop. Over the top of the seat, Hannah saw a truck blocking the end of the bridge. Reese stood between the vehicles, gun drawn. The car's headlamps caught the gleam of his badge. "Get out of the car!" he shouted. "Hannah, get out of the car!" Hannah found the strength to grab the lock and flip open the door. The blonde man made a half-hearted attempt to grab at her, but she slid out of the car. He slammed the door shut, and she heard him shout to the driver, "Let's get out of here!" The car reversed and backed quickly toward the other side of the bridge. She lay on the wide wooden boards with the stink of car exhaust filling her lungs. She could see the glimmer of water through the cracks in the boards. What had almost happened? Shudders racked her shoulders, and she rose painfully to her hands and knees. Her palms stung, and her neck muscles throbbed. Running steps sounded on the boards, and Reese called her name. "I'm here," she said, her voice trembling as hard as her limbs. Then his strong arms were lifting her. He held her close to his chest, and she felt the way his heart pounded in her ear. His breathing sounded ragged, and she knew he'd been just as frightened as she. "You saved me," she whispered. "Again. You always are there at the right time." He cupped his palms on each side of her head and kissed her. "I'll always be here for you. No one is going to harm my Hannah." The possessiveness in his voice thrilled her. No one had ever made her feel she was so precious. "The first time we met, you chased off kids who were throwing tomatoes at me," she said, a smile finally finding its way to her lips. "Stupid kids," he growled. "Just because you Amish don't fight back is no reason..." He broke off. His voice choked. "I got in some licks this time," she said. "I'm ashamed to admit I fought back, but they..." He put his fingers over her lips. "Don't think about it. You did the right thing." In spite of what he said, she'd actually bitten a man. The shame felt too heavy to bear. All her teachings told her a Christian shouldn't fight back, should meekly accept whatever God sent her way. She'd have to carry this choice without telling her parents. "Let's go to the jail and file a complaint against those two." "No," she shuddered at the thought. "I don't know who they were anyway. You got here in time. That's all that matters." "Where were you?" she asked. "I was about to go home." He slipped his arm around her waist. "Got hung up at work. I'm here now. And just in time." She dared to put her arm around his waist, too, and he grinned. His smile was the first of his many good traits to attract her, a smile that reflected a zest for life. He was English, which made him taboo, and maybe that was part of the attraction that spread over her at the sound of his voice. He was older, too, nearly 30, experienced. She liked that about him. The emerging moon gleamed on the badge pinned to his shirt. "I wasn't sure you'd come," he said. Hannah's free hand went to the strings on her bonnet. "I promised I would." The word "promise" mocked her. Honoring her word tonight had caused her to break even bigger pledges. "I shouldn't have come. You belong with me." His hands came down with a possessive grip on her shoulders, big hands, softer than Dad's. As a sheriff's deputy and a detective, Reese didn't chop wood or handle a saw like the men in her community. He smelled good, too. No odor of perspiration, just the spicy fragrance of oriental woods. She'd spent a whole afternoon at the department store last week trying to identify what he wore before deciding it was a fragrance called contradiction. And that pretty much summed up how he made her feel. She dared a glance at his face and smiled back. "I can't stay long. Someone is at home buying Mom's quilts. They'll miss me in a few minutes." He pressed a kiss onto her forehead. "What are we going to do, honey?" he whispered against her hair. "Come to meeting with me this Sunday," she said. It's at our house. Visitors are welcome. He smiled.
Trying to convert me?
It would solve a lot of problems, she admitted. While it was unusual for an Englisher to convert to the Amish faith, it had happened. Her own mother had walked such a path, and it would keep Hannah from having to make an impossible choice between her family and the man she was falling in love with. He tugged her toward the shadows.
Come sit in the truck with me.
He took her hand and led her to his pickup, a black Dodge he'd bought just last week. He opened the door for her, and she slipped inside. It still smelled new, and her cotton dress slid across the leather seats. She ran her palm across the supple leather. So beautiful. Reese got in on the other side and drove under a walnut tree, where he parked. He clicked on the auxiliary power. Music spilled from the radio, his favorite, Creedence Clearwater Revival. Bad Moon Rising blared from the speakers behind her. He slid out from under the steering wheel and pulled her into his arms. His lips came down on hers. She wanted to savor the sensation of his strong arms, let the music blot out her misgivings. Noah had never even embraced her. It wasn't allowed. This was wrong, too, but in this moment, she didn't care. All she knew was the touch of Reese's hands and the scent of the mint on his breath. She relished the mastery of his hands on her. Reese lifted his head, and his breath whispered across her face. You know how I feel about you. Marry me, Hannah. We can leave right now. I'll take care of you. You'll never have to worry about anything. You're mine. You know you are. The bright joy beating against her ribs exploded into panic. She put her palms on his chest and pushed. The bishop would put me under the Maidung. Why couldn't she have met Reese 3 months ago, before she was baptized? But even then, she would have been faced with an impossible choice. She slid away to brace her back against the door, but still she couldn't bring herself to open it and walk away from him. She was weak, so weak. The thought of leaving her family made her lungs ache. Being Amish was as much a part of her body as the bone and sinew that kept her upright. Her life was about laughing and talking around the dinner table with loved ones, working side by side with her mom. She'd never expected to find herself in this place, loving one of the English when she was engaged to one of her own people. "You could convert?" she whispered. "I'd have to give up my job, my life. I can't do it, Hannah. I wish I could, but I'll take care of you. There's a world out there you know nothing about. An exciting world of new experiences." He was right. The Amish faith forbade military service or a job in law enforcement. If she went with him, she would have to give up everything. If he came with her, he'd be in the same position. It was an impossible situation. Oh, but she wanted to be with him. His power and strength made her feel safe when her world seemed filled with uncertainty. He knew so much. All about the world she'd seen only glimpses of. The day after he'd saved her from some neighborhood bullies, he'd come into the cafe where she worked and ordered coffee at one of her tables. She'd been drawn to him from the first. She watched the way the other deputies deferred to him, and every minute she was conscious of his eyes watching her. She shivered. Noah would be so hurt if he saw her in Reese's arms. She should have been stronger. Hannah? Reese reached his hand toward her. Come back over here, honey. It's okay. I won't push you. I just want to take care of you. God would punish her if she accepted the invitation in his voice. From somewhere, she found the courage to grab the door handle and yank it open. She found the motivation to turn and run toward home. Reese called after her, but she didn't slow. The Bible said to flee temptation. The cool wind brushed against her face and shivered down her back. It slowed the blood pounding along her veins, throbbing in her head. Her feet grew lighter as she sped from the bridge toward home. Harsh breaths heaved in and out of her chest. Scalding shame swept through her veins. What had she become? Could this relationship be good if it caused her to sin so grievously against her parents? Against Noah?
Her soles slid over gravel, and she stumbled, nearly went down on one knee. Daring a glance behind, she saw that Reese hadn't followed. She stood and hurried on, stopping on the road to catch her breath. Up ahead, the gas lights glowed yellow through the window. She hoped her parents thought she was still in the barn. Composing her features, she stumbled toward the house, though she doubted Serenity would do her much good. Mom would take one look at her face and see the guilt etched there. Her mother could almost read her mind. Mom knew what it was like to struggle against the strictures of their faith. Maybe Hannah could talk to her. Mom would understand. She'd tell Hannah how to deal with these emotions. The thought of leaving her Amish faith left a hollow sensation in Hannah's soul. She'd been taught and believed that they'd found the true path to God. The house was quiet when she opened the back door. Where were her parents? She walked past the Ringer washing machine in the utility room and stepped into the kitchen. The empty lemonade packet she'd left by the sink still lay there. Her mother had promised to clean up while Hannah did the barn chores. "Mom?" Hannah called. Only silence answered her. Her feet stuck to spilled lemonade on the floor. Her mother never would have left the kitchen in such a state. Had someone taken ill? Alarms began blaring inside her head, and she quickened her pace to rush into the living room, still calling for her mother. Her eyes fixed on a bumpy quilt hugging the middle of the living room floor, and, oddly, a jumble of feet poked out from under it. Her mind fought to sort what her eyes saw. A quilt she'd never seen lay on the floor, black, but bright, with her mother's trademark hummingbird pattern. Dot size 13 black shoes extended from one side of the quilt, while Mom's size 5 shoes peeked out on the other side. "Mom?" she asked. Could this be a joke? Her father loved to tease. They'd hop up any minute laughing at her gullibility. No one moved. She bent down and touched her mother's exposed leg. It was cool. Hannah scrabbled back on her haunches, a scream built behind her teeth, then blared out with such force that her throat went raw. She couldn't stop screeching. The room began to swirl as she rolled onto her stomach and began to crawl. A red symbol had been painted on the wall. The wheel and spokes pattern imprinted itself on the backs of her eyes. A strange word was written just below it. Bile rose in the back of her throat, and she choked it back before stumbling out the door. She had to get to the greenhouse. Bubble lights atop the 4 squad cars parked outside the farmhouse strobed into the night. All available Park County deputies had responded to the call to the Amish farmhouse. Deputy Matt Beitler parked his SUV behind his partner's truck and got out. He buttoned his coat against the wind. When the call came in, he had been enjoying his day off with Annalise. He had not been happy to be summoned to work. He opened the back door and let Ajax, his year-old canine search dog, out of the back. Taking a firm hold on the German Shepherd's leash, he walked toward the house. The odor of manure from the barn wafted over him as he strode over the rough ground. Double homicide on an Amish farm. The Amish were peaceable and model citizens. Reese had sounded almost incoherent when he called, which made Matt break every speed record getting here. His partner wasn't often anything but calm and methodical. O'Connor loathed losing control of anything. Generator-powered floodlights illuminated the yard. The sheriff had already called in the state boys, and technicians were busy looking for clues left by the perp. O'Connor was comforting a young Amish woman. In the dark, it was hard to make out more than her white bonnet. O'Connor glanced up and saw him. With his arm around the young woman, he led her to the porch and seated her in a rocker. "I'll be right back," he said to her before turning to join Matt. Matt watched the woman put her face in her hands. Her shoulders heaved. Her family or friends must be the murder victims. O'Connor would give him the details. "Stay," Matt told the dog. He looped the leash around a hitching post and met his partner halfway, near the front door. "Thanks for getting here so fast." O'Connor took off his hat and swiped at his blonde hair. 30, O'Connor was already showing signs of early balding. He wore a distracted expression.
The detective was one of the most dedicated in the sheriff's department. He'd helped Matt get the job and had been quick to partner with him, even though he was the senior officer. Bad scene? Worse than you can possibly imagine. In the glare of the lights, O'Connor looked deadly white. Both of the parents. He nodded toward the young woman. She found them covered with a quilt. He hesitated. Their limbs are contorted, backs and necks arched. Strychnine poisoning? Maybe. Matt winced. Strychnine was nasty. The victim suffered muscle convulsions that got worse and worse until the poor victim was worn out and the lungs quit working. He wouldn't want to go that way. You interrogate her? O'Connor looked away. Not yet. I was in the area and heard her scream. When I got here, she was outside in shock. I think she passed out briefly. We'd better talk to her. Matt started toward the woman, but his partner grabbed his arm. Go easy on her, O'Connor said. In fact, let me handle it. She's all alone now. Unusual in an Amish family. They bred like rabbits. Easy? We need the truth before the trail goes cold. What's going on with her, boss? Matt stared from his partner to the woman rocking with her arms clasped around herself. Can I at least ask her some questions? O'Connor dropped his hand from Matt's arm. Just be careful. Matt approached the woman. Miss Schwartz, I'm Deputy Beitler. I'd like to ask you some questions. In the brighter wash of light, he guessed her age between 20 and 22. She looked almost colorless between her white bonnet and shapeless gray dress. O'Connor stepped around him and took Hannah's hand. Can you handle this now? He asked the witness. Matt shot his partner an incredulous glare. Since when did they tiptoe around witnesses? The media would be swarming the area any minute, but it was O'Connor's call. Miss Schwartz, he said again. She looked up. In the glare of lights, her eyes took on a golden glow, eyes like those of a tiger. He could see clear down to her soul, and there was only goodness. Matt shook off the thought. In his experience, the first place to look for a perp was among a victim's family and friends, though in this case he suspected a hate crime. But maybe she hated her parents. It happened. She rocked back and forth, back and forth. Can you tell me what happened? I came home from a walk and found my parents. Her voice was hoarse. He could see she was still in shock. What about before your walk? Was there anything out of the ordinary? Anyone else you saw while you were out? She rubbed her head. I don't remember. He straightened from hunching over the notepad in his hand. You don't remember? O'Connor kept patting the woman on the shoulder. Matt had never seen his partner behave this way. Everything is a blur. I can't think. She rubbed fiercely at her temples as though trying to force her brain to cooperate. She looked up at him with a piteous expression. It was my fault. He clicked his pen on again. What do you mean? Of course it wasn't your fault, Hannah, O'Connor said, his voice a little too loud. You need to rest. You'll remember more tomorrow. Matt poised his pen over the paper. How was it your fault? She raised her gaze to his then. I mixed up the lemonade. It was a free sample we got in the mailbox. The poison was in that, wasn't it? What makes you think they were poisoned? The way they looked. Poisoned rats look like that. She shuddered. We use it in the greenhouse. He and O'Connor exchanged glances. O'Connor called over another deputy and asked him to check out the greenhouse. Matt turned back to Hannah. You prepared lemonade before you went out for your walk? She nodded, with lots of sugar because my dad has a sweet tooth. I poured glasses for everyone, including an extra for the guest. Someone was coming to look at Mom's quilts. Was it a man or a woman who came to buy a quilt? She scrunched her forehead and went even paler. Oh, why can't I remember? She moaned. Let me think. She sat quietly a moment. Cyrus. Cyrus Long.
At least I think he was here tonight. My memory is all jumbled up. Maybe he was here last night. I can't remember.
Can't or won't? He asked as O'Connor rejoined them.
Matt,
O'Connor said with a warning in his voice, I want to talk to you. He retreated a few steps from the woman. Matt joined him.
What is with you, man? I've never seen you act like this. You were mucking up the investigation.
O'Connor glanced at Hannah, then back to Matt.
She was with me.
With you? What does that mean?
I mean, she slipped away to meet me.
He crossed his arms over his chest. We were together. That's all you need to know.
Matt couldn't wrap his mind around it. O'Connor was a good 8 years older than the Schwartz woman, and as one of the English, he should have been the last man she'd consider getting involved with.
I see, he said. A little cradle robbing?
He knew he was pushing it. O'Connor was his boss, but that was hard to remember when they were friends, practically brothers, before they were partners.
Shut up. You know nothing about it. I've been waiting all my life for someone like Hannah. Sweet and good. When I'm with her, I'm better than I am alone.
She had nothing to do with this crime, O'Connor said, his voice firm.
You know as well as I do that the perp is usually known to the victim.
You need to tell Sturgis. You can't work this investigation.
This is my case. I know my limits, and I can handle it, Beitler.
O'Connor, think about this. You're already on thin ice with that brutality charge.
O'Connor ran his hand through his hair.
And you think about how you got this job, and where you'd be if not for me.
It went against Matt's strong sense of right and wrong, but he finally shrugged.
Have it your way.
Both men went back to the girl.
I'm going to take a look at the scene, Matt said.
Hannah trembled. I don't have to go, do I?
No, you stay here with Detective O'Connor.
At the house, Matt ducked under the yellow tape at the door and entered the living room. Halogen lights mounted around the room illuminated the bodies lying on the wood floor.
What have we got? He asked Sturgis.
Two adults, I'd guess, in their early 50s. Poisoning, maybe strychnine, from the contortions of the bodies. The autopsy will tell us.
He nodded toward a heap of cloth.
A quilt was over them. The daughter removed it before we were called.
Who called it in? Matt asked.
The daughter. She went out to the greenhouse and used the phone there.
They have a phone?
The captain shrugged. The Amish use phones in their businesses. You ever notice the little phone booths out by the road in their communities? Some of the families will share a phone, but they only use it to make appointments or do business. They don't want it intruding on their personal lives.
Matt depended on his cell phone. He barely glanced at the quilt before allowing his gaze to wander the room. A sofa with worn seat cushions sat against the middle of the wall. Sturdy wooden tables, most likely handmade, flanked it with gas lights flickering on top of them. No rugs, no wall ornamentation or pictures. A red symbol and words on the wall caught his attention.
Blood?
He asked.
Paint!
Sturgis stuck an unlit cigar in his mouth and chomped on it. Matt wanted to chomp on something himself, anything to get the vile taste of murder out of his mouth.
It's a peace symbol. We know what this is all about?
Well, the Amish are all about peace. Maybe it's a hate crime in some twisted way.
A hate crime against the Amish?
That was my first thought. It seems very well thought out. The killer brought in everything he would need.
Not everything,
Matt said, his gaze lighting on a spilled pool of liquid.
Hannah Schwartz mixed up some lemonade that came in the mail.
Might be coincidence.
Maybe.
But Matt would lay money on finding poison in the drink. What about the foreign word? We know what it means?
Not yet. I think it's Greek.
Park County was a quiet area, and murder was uncommon here. The largest town in this west central Indiana community was Rockville, where Matt lived, with a population of 2,650. The joke in the area was that they had more covered bridges than residents. Driving through thick forests and hills was a peaceful pastime of Matt's. He had been on the force less than a year, and this was his first murder. Seeing something like this was a shock he could not imagine getting used to. Matt dragged his gaze from the bodies.
"Let's get the Schwartz woman in here and ask her some more questions. I'll have one of the deputies take Ajax out and see if he can get a scent on the perp."
2. Demut and Gelassenheit are at the heart of a good life, Hannah. Accept whatever God gives you without murmur. Patricia Schwartz. Sitting on the porch of the plain white farmhouse, Hannah couldn't quit rocking. The cold wind, laden with the scent of water from the lake behind the house, tugged at the strings of her bonnet and lifted the hem of her long skirt. The rocking calmed the scream still hunkering in her throat. "It's not true. It's not." The chant echoed in her heart over and over. This had to be a nightmare. She'd awaken any moment to find herself helping Mom make noodles or shoo-fly pie. She'd hear Dot yodeling on his way in from the greenhouse. She'd expected God to punish her for her sin. Even when she'd put her black shoes on the road to the bridge, the knowledge settled over her like one of her mother's heavy quilts. The heart commits sin first, and her heart was as black as the night. This punishment, though, was too much. She couldn't bear it. Reese stayed close, but she huddled inside herself, undeserving of his comfort.
"Hannah Liebling?"
Hannah looked up to see her Aunt Nora and her cousin Mo standing by the steps.
"You're not yodeling now," she told Mo.
Confusion contorted his face, and she knew she wasn't making sense. Her aunt rushed up the steps with her arms outstretched. Hannah rose to meet her and practically fell into her arms.
"They're dead," she sobbed.
The scream she'd been holding back built in her throat, moving closer to her mouth. She clamped her teeth closed again. Nora held her, their tears mingling. Hannah became conscious of Moe's big hand on her shoulder, too. He wouldn't know what to say, but his presence calmed her. Nora had to be grieving, too. She'd lost the brother she loved. How could a loving God allow something like this to happen? Hannah didn't understand.
"Miss Schwartz?"
Hannah lifted her gaze to meet that of the young cop. She struggled past the cotton wool in her brain to find his name. Deputy Beitler. He was a merciless hunter, his blue eyes assessing her for any weakness. His gaze softened for a moment, then hardened to flint again. He couldn't blame her any more than she blamed herself.
"Come inside with me a minute. There are some questions we need to ask, and we want you to see if anything is missing in the home."
"I can't,"
she whispered. Her gaze went past his shoulder to the black body bags being wheeled out of the house on gurneys. A scream rose in her throat, but she locked it behind her teeth. Her mouth and eyes watered with the effort of holding in her grief.
"Be strong, Hannah," Mo said. "We'll go with you if you need us."
Before she could answer, she heard the sound of buggy wheels and the deep vibration of her cousin Luca's voice calling to her. The blood rushed to her head. And without realizing she was moving, she found herself by the buggy as Luca swung his boots to the ground. He was more like a brother than a cousin to her, having lived with the Schwartz family since he was 5. The Amish didn't hold much with hugging, but in her desperation for comfort, she hurtled herself into her cousin's arms. He smelled of sweat and horse as his arms came around her awkwardly, though he hugged her as tightly as she clung to him. His chest heaved, and she knew he'd heard the news. She lifted her head and saw his shocked gaze on the body bags being loaded into the emergency vehicle. But she couldn't turn and look, too. One glimpse had been too much to bear.
"Both of them?"
he whispered. She wet her lips, but no words could make it past the tight constriction of her throat, so she merely nodded. His gaze roamed her face as though to seek out some glimmer of hope. When he found none, his shoulders drooped.
"It is God's will," he said.
"Will we not accept both good and evil from his hand?" It was the way of the Amish to accept whatever came, to turn the other cheek when injured, but both of Hannah's cheeks felt brutalized, left raw and bleeding. She had no more to give.
Seeing the bodies of her parents had shattered her innocence. The pain in their faces had driven a spike deep into her heart and left a wound that would never heal. Why should they have had to suffer on her behalf? And there was another death, one few people knew about. Mom was going to have a baby after many years of trying. Luca released her, and she followed him as he went to where Reese stood with Deputy Beitler. Nora and Mo were a few feet away, and Mo was comforting his mother. Even if Luca was unaware of the detective's speculative stare, she was not. How could the man suspect they might be capable of such a horrible deed? He must know nothing about her or her people. Luca stopped in front of the detectives. "I am Luca Schwartz, Hannah's cousin. I live here, too. Can you tell me what has happened?"
"I'm Deputy Beitler. This is Detective O'Connor."
"I'm sorry to tell you that your aunt and uncle were murdered tonight." He paused when Luca made a soft moan.
"I'm sorry for your loss. Can you tell me how you happened to be living with them?"
"My dad and Abe were brothers. My parents were killed in a buggy accident when I was 5. The deputy nodded toward the house.
"I was about to ask your cousin to examine the home and see if anything is missing. I'd appreciate your cooperation as well. If we can pinpoint the motive, it might lead us to the killer."
Digging her feet into the dirt, Hannah prepared to tell him again that she couldn't go back in there, but Luca nodded and turned toward the house. Her gaze collided with the young deputy's, and she could have sworn she saw triumph in his eyes. Her dislike of him mounted. Life wasn't a game, and it shouldn't be about power. Her heritage emphasized the good of the many, not self-interest in power. The English persisted in getting the focus of life wrong. She clutched her wool cape more tightly and followed the men. Duty called, and she would do her best to answer it. She glanced at Reese, and he answered the plea she put in her gaze by taking her elbow. The warm touch of his hand strengthened her.
"I couldn't get through this without you," she whispered.
He gave her elbow a reassuring squeeze. "I'll protect you, Hannah. No matter what it takes, you can count on me." She nodded, knowing he meant the words from the heart. With him by her side, she didn't feel so alone. His presence was better than her aunt's or her cousin's. Maybe because she knew how her family would react if they knew why she'd survived this night. She wet her lips and forced herself to step through the door. The spot where she'd found her parents drew her gaze. But they were gone. Cruel. Deputy Beitler was as cruel as the devil himself. She averted her gaze from the spot, and the room blurred as she blinked back moisture. She was overreacting. He was doing his job, finding out who killed her parents.
"Anything missing?" Deputy Beitler asked.
Hannah forced herself to study the room. The harsh glare from the lights the detectives had strung around the room threw everything out of focus. The stark illumination forced its way into the shadows, showed every defect with glaring detail, and made the room look small and forlorn. Was the couch really that worn? The wood floor that scuffed? She knew what it must look like to these Englishers, even Reese. A modest home with the bare necessities. Their home had been filled with love and laughter, good food, acceptance. These men chased after fireflies that escaped their fingers, always pursuing bigger and better. A place like this held true riches. The men sought what was in this very home, but they didn't know it. A large wooden chest, 6 feet long and 8 feet tall, occupied the east wall. The door stood open, and the shelves were bare. A gasp escaped Hannah's lips.
"What is it?"
"Mom's quilts."
Barely aware that she put one foot in front of the other, Hannah walked to the chest. At last count, there had been 10 quilts, each worth at least $1,500 to $2,000. But it wasn't the lost money she mourned. Her mother had a special touch with fabric, an unusual method of juxtaposing color and design that no one else could duplicate.
The hummingbird design she'd stitched into many of her quilts had never been matched and was admired in their community and in the state. Hannah could pick her mother's handiwork out of thousands of quilts. She turned her head to the men who had followed her. They're gone. All of her quilts. Whirling, she went back to the center of the room. Where's the quilt that covered them? It's been taken in for evidence. I've never seen it before, but it was Mom's. How do you know it if you've never seen it? Reese's partner asked. The hummingbird pattern stitched into the quilt. No one else does that. You have to look close to see the fine detail, the tiny stitches, the design. Maybe it was made when she was younger or when you were too small to remember, Reese suggested. Perhaps. Uneasiness tugged away the composure she'd begun to gather around herself. Anything else missing? Asked Deputy Beitler, his voice clipped. Hannah glanced at her cousin. Do you see anything, Luca? He shook his head. I checked upstairs. All is in order. Why would anyone take the quilts? How many? Reese asked.
10. Close to $20,000.
She winced inwardly at how flat her voice sounded. The deputy would think she cared about the money, when in fact, it was the last thing on her mind. They'll probably start turning up on eBay, Beitler said. Or in shops that sell Amish quilts, Reese said. Deputy Beitler pointed to the wall. That symbol mean anything to you? Slowly, she dragged her gaze to the garish red symbol she'd avoided since entering the house. She forced herself to study it, but it just looked like a cross with a beam sagging. The word under it contained letters she'd never seen before. No. She swayed where she stood, and Reese took her arm. She's about dead on her feet, he said. She needs to rest. No more questions tonight, Beitler. The other deputy's scowl darkened. I'm not through yet. You're done for tonight. Reese's voice was firm. She's had all she can take. He put his arm around Hannah, and she leaned into his embrace in spite of the raised eyebrows the action was sure to cause. Luca shifted from one foot to the other. Can we stay here? Beitler gave him a sharp look. Not until we're done gathering evidence. The last thing Hannah wanted was to stay here.
I want to stay with Aunt Nora, Hannah said. She needs me, too.
Luca nodded. I'll come, too. Deputy Beitler took out his pen and pad. What's the address? I'll likely have more questions tomorrow. Luca gave him the address, and he jotted it down. Another deputy poked his head in the door. We've got another body, down by the pond. Ajax led us right to it. The body lay half-submerged in the pond along the back of the property. The contorted limbs told Matt the man had died the same painful death as the family inside. Any ID?
Yeah, one of the deputies said. Driver's license belongs to a Cyrus Long.
Only when Hannah gasped behind him did Matt realize she and Luca had followed him and O'Connor. He swiveled on his heel to face them.
This the guy who was here tonight?
In the wash of the halogen lights, Hannah's skin held no color. Her gaze stayed fixed on the body. He moved to obstruct her vision, and the horror in her eyes began to recede. She looked up at him then.
Yes, he's our neighbor.
Her mouth dropped open, then closed. He said he wanted to buy one for his wife, Ellen. Her gaze focused on Matt again. Her birthday is next week. Matt took the pad and pen out of his pocket.
How well did you know them?
Luca answered, as well as any English neighbor. We were friendly, but our lives went in different directions. Hannah nodded.
How did he get this far?
O'Connor asked, still inspecting the body.
If the perp poisoned him, too, how did he get out of the house?
Good question. Maybe the coroner can tell us.
He stepped away to talk to O'Connor in private. Let's start canvassing the neighbors, checking Niceville and other towns around the county, see if anyone has heard threats directed toward the Amish. O'Connor nodded.
We had that rash of barn arsons 5 years ago. Three Amish barns were torched. Maybe it's related? We never found the offender.
Hey, look at this, Matt.
one of the deputies called. The plastic bag the deputy pointed to held chocolate chip cookies. Matt glanced around the area. No quilts, but the pond was right here. Maybe this is the murder weapon, and maybe this is the perp. Let's dredge for the quilts. Maybe toss them in the water.
Hannah's world had gone dark, even though sunlight streamed in the windows of her aunt's home. Through unblinking eyes, Hannah lay on the bed looking up at a water stain on the ceiling. Downstairs, Aunt Nora clanged pots. She could smell the aroma of coffee and shoofly pie, something that would normally have her scooting down the steps. No one made shoofly pie like Aunt Nora. The upstairs felt quiet, almost as though it mourned with her. The Amish community had circled around the past week, trying to love the pain away. Their kindness wasn't working. A tap sounded on the door, and she tried to ignore it. She felt no hunger, felt nothing more than the slight weight of the blanket on her body and the beginning thump of a migraine in her left temple.
"Hannah, are you awake?"
called her best friend Sarah through the wood panel. She struggled into a sitting position.
"Come in, Sarah."
She had thought Sarah would come this morning. She lived two farms over. Her friend eased into the room as though she feared her footstep on the bare wood floorboards would cause a fresh spate of sobs. She carried a tray of steaming coffee and a sliver of shoo-fly pie on a saucer.
"I brought you some breakfast."
Her dark blue dress and white apron were pressed and starched, and her hair wasn't drawn back quite so tightly as usual under her cap. Sarah had a crush on Luca, and Hannah wondered if he was downstairs, too. The aroma of the molasses pie filled the room, but Hannah turned away from it.
"I'm not hungry."
She swung her legs over the edge of the mattress. She had to get up, face the day. Sarah shut the door behind her with one foot.
"Try to eat, Hannah. You can't mope. God's will be done."
"If one more person says that to me, I will scream." She swallowed against the constriction in her throat and composed herself.
"I know God is sovereign, but it's not fair, Sarah."
She rubbed at her temple.
"You have a headache?"
Sarah moved to sit on the bed. She took Hannah's hand and began to apply pressure to the fleshy pad between the thumb and the first finger. Hannah's headache began to ease almost immediately.
"Thanks, Sarah."
"Why couldn't God punish me instead of them?"
"How was it your fault? The poison was in the cookie Cyrus brought."
"But it was my sin." Confession trembled on her tongue.
"God's punishment is more than I can bear."
"You haven't done something with Noah, have you?" If only it were that simple. She and Noah could kneel at the next meeting and confess.
"No, he has been a perfect gentleman."
She lifted her head.
I've been seeing someone else. Someone English."
Sarah put her hand to her mouth.
"Oh, no, Hannah. You must turn away from him. Confess it to the bishop. It will all be forgiven. Who is it?"
"It doesn't matter." Hannah stood and went to grab her dress from the hook on the wall.
"I'd better get dressed. The funeral begins in 2 hours.
She went down the hall to the bathroom and made herself presentable. Hannah had lied. It did matter. She was lost. Abandoned. How could she stay here among her people and be reminded daily that she'd caused something so bad? And what if God wasn't finished? Maybe he would do more to harm her loved ones because of her sin. Besides, she longed for Reese, for his strength and take-charge attitude. He'd only been able to see her in his professional capacity, but when their eyes met, she knew he ached for her pain. Sarah had gone by the time Hannah entered the kitchen, a big rectangular room occupied by cabinets along the far end and the table and chairs at the other. Aunt Nora stood by the sink. About 5 feet in height, she was nearly as big around as she was tall, and she turned to envelop Hannah in an embrace smelling of mint from the meadow tea she'd likely gathered minutes ago.
"My dear," Nora crooned.
"I want them back, Aunt Nora," she whispered. Her aunt smoothed her hair.
"I know, Liebling, so do I."
At least Aunt Nora wasn't offering platitudes. Why would Cyrus do this?
Her aunt pulled away and turned to the refrigerator. She shook her head.
You must eat.
Hannah stared at the older woman's back. What was that brief expression of disagreement in her aunt's eyes?
Aunt Nora, do you suspect someone other than Cyrus? He had the cookies in his hand. The clerk saw him make them in his bakery.
Mo stuck his head in the door.
The buggy is ready. We need to go.
Her aunt turned to the door.
Let's go, Hannah. We'll be late.
She snatched a wool cape off the hook and went out the back door. Hannah followed, but her thoughts swirled. Did her aunt know Cyrus? 3.
Hannah, you're going out to work in the world. Make sure you hold yourself separate. Always remember your traditions and your faith.
Patricia Swartz. They were four lone survivors in an unfamiliar world. The heavy clop-clop of the horse's hooves struck the pavement like a death bell clanging as Hannah huddled in the back of the buggy beside her aunt. Luca sat in front with Mo and guided the horse past bare winter fields whose only signs of life were the remains of corn stalks sticking through the muddy soil. The black horse-drawn hearses, two of them, in front of her cousin's buggy, crawled under a leaden sky. The dark seemed to press down with a heavy hand that she could not escape. The cemetery was on the edge of her father's farm. Narrow wooden stakes bearing only the initials of the deceased dotted the hillside just past the tall maple trees that protected the gravesites. The gravediggers had left a trail of mud across the wet grass. At over 2 weeks after death, the burials were long overdue. But they had had to wait until the autopsies were completed and the bodies released. The funeral service itself was a long blur held at the church. A few hymns sung without instrumental accompaniment, some scripture and a sermon. The service was hardly different from any other Sunday gathering, yet it was not the same at all. Everything was changed now, as radically different as if Hannah had awakened in some strange world. Friends mouthed sympathy, but not a word penetrated. For an instant she longed for a service like the English had, a memorial where friends and family were allowed to speak their minds about their loved ones. The minister had mentioned her parents only in passing. She spoke to her hands.
"I couldn't have survived this without you, Luca."
He didn't look at her.
"Yeah, they were like my own parents. I have no one now. No one but you."
Luca turned his horses into the cemetery lane behind the hearses just as the first cold drops of rain began to strike Hannah's face. He pulled back on the reins and the horse slowed, then stopped. He clambered down and held up a hand to assist her. The serenity of his expression gave her pause. Wasn't he just as tormented as she was? The wind whipped her skirt and tugged tendrils of hair loose from her bonnet, but the chilly air wasn't nearly as disquieting as the icy cold inside her body. Hanging on to his arm, she followed her cousin to the yawning graves. Hot moisture sprang to her eyes at the dark holes scarring the earth. She couldn't bear to see her parents put down into the black earth. Not them. She looked away, stumbling under the weight of her doubt. Had she absorbed so much of the English way of thinking in her little contact with them? When her grandparents had died, she was able to accept it. They had lived good, long lives. But this loss left Hannah longing for the touch of her mother's hand, for the sound of her father's yodel as he walked from the greenhouse. If anyone deserved to be in heaven, it was her parents. She knew that was true. But heavy mourning muffled her conviction that they were in a better place. Aunt Nora embraced her, and they both nearly toppled, but Luca righted them with a steady hand.
"Hannah, you're making a spectacle," he whispered. "Pull yourself together."
"Hush, Luca," her aunt said. "She's the one who found them. Can you not have some compassion?" She hugged Hannah tight.
"Go ahead and cry, Liebling."
A few wayward tears slipped down Hannah's cheeks, but she managed to choke back the sob that bubbled in her throat. How could Luca be so calm, almost serene? Pulling away from her aunt, she drew herself erect, tipping her chin into the air. If they could do it, so could she. Others would be looking to her to be an example. The bishop would expect decorum. From the corner of her eye, she saw Noah Whetstone coming across the sodden grass toward her, strong both in body and in spirit. Such a good man! Why, then, did she turn her head and pretend she didn't see him? Why did dread coat her limbs with lethargy? She'd promised herself to him. Their wedding was only 3 months away. He was so boring. The thought of listening to his slow voice across the dinner table for the next 50 years made her shudder. He never talked of anything but lumber and building materials. Rhys spoke of exotic places he wanted to show her, Hawaii at sunset with its flood of color, the scent of Irish bogs, the sound of the chimes at Big Ben, a world out of her league and out of her reach. She'd asked her father to continue school because that was the only way she'd ever see some places. The Amish forbade air travel, but her father had refused. Rhys wanted to show her everything, let her chase every experience. She forced a smile of welcome at Noah when she could no longer pretend, then her gaze tracked the crowd. Mostly her own people, but some reporters and a few English neighbors as well. She longed to see Rhys's face. She knew he would come. His worldliness strengthened him, and she could draw from his wells. Her gaze fell on the caskets being carried to the graves. Her sin had caused this. She hated that she still yearned for the Englisher, for the exciting world he offered. She was wanton, evil. Noah's big hand fell on her shoulder. Hannah? She turned her head, moving so his hand fell away. Hello, Noah. Thanks for coming. Did you think I would not? His hazel eyes held worry and questions. He took her arm to escort her to the open graves. No, of course, I knew you would come, she said, falling into step beside him. He had been by the house nearly every day since the murders, and the strain between them had grown instead of lessened. He had to know something was wrong. Steeling herself for what must come, she tightened her hold on her emotions. She must not disgrace her family this day. Two women, hurrying over the uneven ground, caught her attention. For a moment she forgot to breathe. The older woman looked like her mother, dressed in English clothes. The same auburn hair as Hannah's own, cut in a stylish, layered cut, barely touched her chin. Only when the women neared did Hannah draw in a breath. Of course it wasn't, Mum. It must be your sister Kathy, the Aunt Hannah had never met. She stepped out to meet them. The older woman embraced Hannah, and it felt like hugging Mom. Hannah clung to her, closing her eyes and pretending for just a moment that the woman was her mother. But her mother never wore strong cologne, and the clothes were all wrong. Hannah pulled away. The woman kept her hands on Hannah's shoulders. You must be Hannah. You're the spitting image of Patty. Hannah had never heard her mother referred to as Patty. She liked the informal, breezy nickname. Your Aunt Kathy? Kathy nodded and dropped her hands. I'm so sorry, sweetie. Tears flooded her eyes. Your mother was a wonderful woman. I know, Hannah whispered. Her gaze went to the younger woman, about her own age. Are you Mary? She'd seen a picture of her cousin when she was about 10. Mary nodded. We look enough alike to be sisters, she said. Subtle touches of makeup enhanced Mary's skin and eyes. Hannah stared into Mary's face and saw what she could be if she were English. The stylish clothes, the cute hairstyle. She was aware of how she must look to these two women. A frumpy dress, lank hair wound up on top of her head and covered with a prayer cap, sensible black shoes. She didn't deserve the life she led now. A life supposedly devoted to a god who had punished her beyond what she could bear.
It was hard to even form her lips around acceptable words, to manage a smile.
"Thank you for coming," she said. "How did you hear about it?"
"Your Aunt Nora called me." Kathy's eyes reddened. "I wish I'd come sooner. I never got a chance to tell Patty I was sorry."
"Now it's too late."
Hannah caught the movement of Luca's arm.